Well, Mr. Murray, that proves it.
What does it prove?
This cider is definitely contaminated. You see, the test tube has turned blue.
So 'tis blue. So what?
The cider is contaminated with metal ions. No wonder your customers thought it was ropey.
I tried it myself. It's a bit tart, fair enough, but I've had worse.
I'll wager there weren't many came back for a second pint.
True.
We're going to have to drain the barrel and see what the source of the contamination is.
You'd think with a war on, the Ministry of Health would have better things to do.
We've got to get to the bottom of it, Mr. Murray.
The bottom of it? Who are?
Well, come on, then. Let's get it to the yard. Help me roll out the barrel.
Look, this may be a joke to you, but 'tis no joke to I. Considering there's fines for throwing bread to the birds these days, seems daft to pour good cider down the drain.
Not good cider, Mr. Murray. Ropey cider.
Because of some blue bloody test tube.
Metal contamination is serious. Have you ever had trouble with Lockwood cider before?
Never. It's always good cider from Lockwood Farm.
Not this time.
I'm going to be at the cost of the drink down the drain. What do the Ministry of Health say about that?
First things first. All right, that's about it.
If 'tis metal, 'tis some tool, most like. Some careless bugger at Lockwood's dropped a metal tool when barrel were fastened.
Good Lord. This is no farm tool, Mr. Murray.
What you got there? Oh, that be a skull.
A human skull. And the source of the metal. Yes, dental fillings. No wonder your cider was rough, Mr. Murray.
Rough Cider, the novel by Peter Lovesey, dramatized for radio by Michael Z. Lewin, with Rob Edwards and Bryony Glasgow.
When I was 9, I fell in love with a girl of 20 named Barbara, who killed herself. It's an extraordinary story. I've been telling myself for years that I must put it in writing. Can't expect the memories to stay vivid forever. I'm nearly 60 now. But the story doesn't begin with Barbara. It begins with Alice. Alice Ashenfelter. When I was 29 in 1964.
Excuse me, is this place saving?
No. And not very articulate for a university history lecturer, I agree.
Great. I hope you don't mind the smell of curry. If there's anything hot and spicy on a menu, I'm enslaved. Mexican food is my number one favorite, but you just can't get it here.
But it was not every lunchtime, even at Reading University in 1964, that I was joined by a girl with pouting lips like Bardo's, blonde hair, and gold-rimmed glasses. Not in a self-serve restaurant, which was three-quarters empty.
Oh, wow, this is hot. I'm sure going to need some water. How do you get water in a place like this?
There's a...
Oh, I see, over there. And it's already poured into glasses. That's cute.
I was flattered that such a girl chose to sit with me, I admit it. When she came back, it was with two glasses of water.
I wasn't sure if you wanted any, Theo, but I thought I'd save you the trip in case you did.
No accident and a clear warning sign.
You shouldn't have bothered, miss. And I have to go now. I'm sure a spare glass of water will come in handy with a hot curry. Bon appetit.
Oh, no, don't go. Please, don't go. Theo, Dr. Sinclair?
But go, I did.
Oh, come on. Don't you want to hear how I know your name?
Well, that was the point, exactly. Knowing a teacher's first name was not a small thing in 1964. In those days, teachers, even university lecturers, were treated with respect and expected to be treated with respect. But it was not a major incident, and it was a Friday, with that host of things that always need to be done before one is allowed one's weekend. So, odd though it may seem now, the unusual lunchtime event was soon forgotten.
Hi. Hi again.
Until at the end of the day, in the history department car park, I found Alice draped over the bonnet of my red MG, like a motor show advert. Most attractive, of course, but how did she know the MG was mine?
Dr. Sinclair, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you at lunch.
You didn't embarrass me, miss.
Well, I sure didn't mean to. I meant to intrigue you.
You didn't do that either. I was intrigued, of course. But even in those comparatively innocent days, there were a lot of nutters about. I unlocked the MG and got in.
Look, where are you going now?
Where I normally go at the end of a day.
Could we talk?
Here, now?
No, I mean someplace private. Any place you want.
Uh-oh.
I think not.
You're making this very difficult for me.
Good.
It's very important to me.
Well, it's not important to me.
How can I make you give me some time?
Make me? Good day, miss.
Please. Theo, please.
And that, I was convinced, was that. I drove home. I spent Friday evening preparing the next week's lectures. Saturday afternoon passed agreeably with the Rugby International on grandstand. Saturday evening passed less agreeably with Val, a staff nurse at Reading General, at a film, Hard Day's Night. Val had lobbied for something meatier, like Loess's King and Country, but I hadn't fancied spending my evening at a court-martial, even such an historically important one. If you think that's a deplorable attitude for a history lecturer, you're right on Val's wavelength. I certainly wasn't. I went home alone. And I never noticed a thing until I went upstairs to bed.
Hi again.
What the?
The catch on your toilet window is loose.
The lavatory is downstairs.
I need to talk to you, Theo. Please. There is a reason. I'm not crazy.
She'd asked for someplace private. Well, my bed was distressingly private, and it was a surefire way to get my attention.
Please. Get in. Please.
What could I do? Well, I know what I could have done, but I got in. Look, this is my story. I'm not going to pretend to be noble or heroic.
Are you still mad at me?
Do I look mad?
I can't see without my glasses.
on the table. Yeah.
Oh. You do look a little, distray, but not mad.
So?
So?
Let's get it over with. There was something you wanted to say?
Yes.
Come on, I'm tired. I mean, help with an essay or what?
Oh, it's going to be hard for me. Please, just be patient. This means more to me than I can put into words.
Uh-oh. But even in the 60s, one didn't expect something for nothing. And Alice had earned quite a lot of my patience, truth be told.
It's why I came to England and why... Oh. Theo, I want you to tell me about my daddy.
What?
My daddy. I never knew him, but you did.
I'm sorry, but I've never known anybody by the name of Ashenfelter. Not before today.
Oh, no, you knew my daddy, all right. He was hanged for murder back in 1945.
You're Duke Donovan's daughter?
That's right.
But you can't be.
I am.
No, but you can't be.
It was in an ebony needlework box when my mom died. All the papers, her first marriage license, letters, and then these newspaper clippings about the skull in the cider murder case in England. At first, I couldn't tell why she kept them, but then I saw the name of the murderer was Donovan, the same name as on the marriage license. They were married in April 1943.
Good God.
And I was born the next February. He was my daddy, Theo. And you did know him. It said so in the newspaper. You testified.
Oh, I knew Duke Donovan, all right. More than knew him. I loved him. Loved him as only a lonely child could love an adult who offered glamour and excitement and attention. This part of the story began in September 1943, when a German bomb hit the boiler house of my suburban school in Middlesex. At the instigation of the headmaster, most of the school was evacuated to Somerset. I was allotted to Lockwood Farm in the hamlet of Christian Gifford, between Shepton Mallet and Glastonbury.
This be the little fella, then?
Theodore Sinclair, Mrs. Lockwood.
Oh.
He looks puny, but I'm assured he's a healthy scrap.
Oh, ah.
Is your husband about, or your children?
In the house at harvest time.
Well, I shan't wait. I'll leave little Theo to your tender mercies.
And how do little Theo take to bread and dritten, then?
Oh, yes, please.
Come on, then, little Theo.
Oh, I remember those two slices of bread generously spread with dripping and gravy as if it were 10 minutes ago.
I'm sure everything will work out satisfactorily. Let me know if there are any problems.
I'd like to say I remember the rest of the afternoon clearly, but I don't. Probably I slept. Until Barbara appeared in the early evening. and stood before me as if she'd stepped straight out of my dreams.
Ma'am? Oh, this be our evacuee, then?
That's him.
Oh, he's sweet. Curled up like a kitten.
You take him upstairs. Put him in Bernard's room.
Well, haven't you seen where you're going to sleep yet, little one?
No, miss.
Well, let's take a look, shall us? Come on. Get your things and we'll settle you in. It's a big bed for a little lad.
It's fine.
'Tis my brother Bernard's bed. But he's got a farm of his own now, and he sleeps there.
Oh!
You ever been on a farm before?
No, miss.
Well, I never been to London. So until that happens, we're about equal, I reckon.
That night, I didn't shed a single tear. I lay in bed, going over and over that first image of Barbara standing above me, untying a mass of fine dark hair that tumbled onto her shoulders. She was 19 when I met her, with soft skin and delicate features, and I was in love.
So this be the little bugger, then?
I met George Lockwood, Barbara's father, the next morning. To me, he seemed a huge man, with mats of dark hair on his forearms and several gaps in his teeth.
Not much of him.
I reckon he's strong enough, George.
Better be. Bring him out Saturday noon. We'll soon see if he can handle the jug.
The jug was the cider jug, and my tea time task was to take it round and top up the mugs and bottles when Mrs. Lockwood brought freshly baked scones and a bowl of cream to the field where the harvesters were at work. It was not just George Lockwood I was introduced to that day. It was Somerset cider.
Look, he's spilt some.
A bit uneasy on his pegs, the little lad.
Need something to steady him.
Have a drop more, boy. Finish this off.
I don't remember my first trip to the harvest field all that well. But I do remember the end of that day in my bedroom.
How are you feeling now?
Very well, thank you.
You've got nice soft hair, little one.
I have the clearest recollection of the touch of her fingertips.
Dad says you can stay, Theo.
Good.
And even though I hadn't known my continued presence was in doubt, I could have wept for joy.
How did you meet my daddy, Theo?
Ah, it was a direct result of a mouth being bigger than a brain. You see, I didn't understand country ways, and I had a child's urge to compensate when I was sent to the school in the village. What I did understand was wartime London, and when my real stories ran out, I began to make more up. And that included stories about GIs.
What kind of stories?
Well, I thought that out in Somerset they'd never have seen GIs. So I claimed that because I was the child of a war widow, I could get chewing gum from any GI I asked.
Is that true about your father dying in the war?
Yeah.
Mine too.
Yes, well,
go on.
Well, what I didn't know was that there was an American base at Shepton Mallet. So no sooner had I made this rash declaration than right outside Miss Mumford's village shop, someone spotted a khaki-coloured GI Jeep. And I was issued with a challenge, produce some gum.
And what happened?
I had to try. So I walked through Miss Mumford's door. Inside, there were these two soldiers talking to Miss Mumford, and the short one, Harry, was asking for milk.
Milk is rationed, young man.
Oh, I know that, but I meant a can of condensed milk or evaporated milk, or maybe dried, anything at all.
It's all rationed.
Oh, God damn it.
My pal hates to take no for an answer, ma'am, but he don't mean nothing by it.
Duke was taller than Harry, and somehow it seemed like he was in charge.
Tell me what he looked like.
Tall, strong, friendly. He had short hair, well, like they all did, and that GI uniform. Well, for us, it was the essence of glamour. I was there to ask them for gum, but in the event, I couldn't say a word. Duke bought a mineral, and then they left, and as they walked past me, Duke patted me on the head. It brought me back to life. I ran after them because maybe, just maybe, I'd seen a way out of my dilemma.
Have some of my soda pop, Harry.
How can you drink something called Tizer Duke? What kind of name is that?
It's okay.
Jeez Louise.
Excuse me?
I think there's someone wants to talk to you, Duke.
I know where you and your friend can get some milk.
You do?
Yes, sir.
Oh, he thinks you're an officer.
It's my natural air of command.
If you want some.
Well, I sure want some milk, kid. You just point me to it, huh?
We all piled into the Jeep, in plain sight of the village schoolchildren across the road. And my career as an evacuee went from the pits to the peaks in a single moment.
And you got them the milk?
Well, I knew there were some cows at the farm, but that's about all I knew. And I didn't really care that much.
because hadn't I just driven out of the village in the back of a GI Jeep?
What the hell kind of place are you taking us to, kid?
Ain't you never seen a farm before, Harry?
How many goddamn farms do you think there are in Jersey City?
And again, it was Barbara who appeared to help me out.
Hey, hey, hey. Will you look at that?
I'm looking.
If I'd known that's what they kept on farms, I'd have found one a long time ago.
There wasn't any milk for them, but Duke and Harry didn't care for a minute. It was Duke who spotted a cider cask.
No, no. You only get cider around here if you work for it.
Well, I'll work, sweetheart. You lead me to it.
The apple harvest begins on Saturday. I'm sure my father'd be pleased with some extra hands.
Well, what do you think, Duke?
I'm game, if we can get the pass.
Leave that to me.
My pal Harry figures he can fix up just about anything, ma'am.
So, Toots, we'll see you Saturday, huh?
And could you bring some chewing gum, please?
You cheeky thing.
And some gum for my chum. Sure thing.
And they drove away without their milk.
And that's how you met my daddy?
And that's how I met your daddy. And sealed his fate.
Did Duke and Harry come up to the apple harvest on Saturday?
They did. The beginning of apple harvest was a big event. Mm. There were a lot of people I hadn't met before, including Barbara's brother, Bernard. Also girls from the village, and a dark-haired man who was obviously interested in Barbara. I didn't like him at all.
Oh, jealous and so young.
Oh, that's as maybe. But the way I saw it then in my 9-year-old mind, Cliff Morton was intruding on Duke and Barbara as a couple. I liked them both. It seemed right and natural that they should be together. And Harry seemed to understand Duke's primacy with Barbara too, because he concentrated his attentions on a friend of Barbara's, Sally Shoesmith.
Hmm. What was she like?
Chunky, bright-eyed, a redhead with freckles and a quick smile. In fact, Harry and Sally became the centre of attention that day. I remember Harry giving Sally lucky strikes, one by one. Hmm. And I remember he took a long time over helping her to get some twigs out of her hair.
Ooh, he was being a bit fast for those days, wasn't he?
Oh, but Duke and Harry could do no wrong. They were like film stars to us. They talked just like people we'd only ever seen in the cinema. Harry was the James Cagney type. Duke was more like Henry Fonda. But during the break for tea, I noticed Barbara wasn't around.
Where was she?
I don't know. But when we went back to work, Mr. Lockwood walked off to look for her. And pretty soon, a figure appeared out of the thickest part of the orchard. Cliff Morton.
The guy you didn't like.
That's right. Without a word, he took his bike and rode off. Then Barbara appeared, followed by her father. She was crying.
Barbara? Oh, my love, what is it?
Nothing. I'm all right.
That Cliff Morton been bothering you, girl?
Oh, just leave me be.
He won't pick no more apples on this farm.
Later, I saw marks on Barbara's neck and heard her mother talking softly in her bedroom. Of course, at 9, I didn't have a clue what they were talking about.
So what are we talking about?
Well, I dare say I would recognize them as love bites now.
So what happened?
Harvest continued.
I mean, with your Barbara, had she been attacked or what?
Well, it was never talked about, but not in my presence.
Honestly?
Do you want to hear the story or not? You can leave any time.
Sorry. Now, go on.
Well, a few days later, Duke came back again for a couple of hours in the evening, after tea. Mm-hmm. I was over the moon because he brought me a whole box of gum to dole out to my classmates. As far as I was concerned, Duke was my friend for life. And on the way back from the orchard, I heard Duke and Mr. Lockwood talking.
Barbara not helping out with the harvest, sir?
Seen too many apples, I reckon.
But she's okay, sir?
Right as rain.
Because some of the guys at the base are putting on a show for Columbus Day a week from Saturday. Amateur talent, mostly. But not bad. Not bad at all. Harry and I, well, we figured maybe Barbara and her friend Sally...
Can he get hold of a gun?
Excuse me?
A gun. Can he get one?
I guess I could, sir.
And can he use one?
Sure.
Sunday.
Sir?
We'll shoot some pigeons for supper. It'll give you a chance to talk to the lass.
Of course, being so young, I wasn't invited to the shoot. Mr. Lockwood and his son Bernard, they each had a shotgun. Duke and Harry shared a service-issue automatic pistol, a Colt 45. Nobody asked them where it came from.
Hmm. And did Duke speak to Barbara?
She agreed to go to the show. But that was the least of what I was interested in.
What?
Well, Duke promised me he'd come back another time and show me how to shoot the Colt pistol.
Ah, he could get it whenever he wanted?
He left it at the farm, in a drawer in the hall stand where the shotguns were kept.
But why did he do that?
It was an army weapon. He obviously shouldn't have brought it out to the farm, so putting it back where it came from would have been an extra risk.
Are you awake, little one?
You're back.
I've got something for you, from Duke.
What is it? I can't see.
Can't you smell?
Chocolate.
A Hershey bar, they say.
Do you want some?
No, it's for you. Oh, little one, the show was wonderful. It was so funny and so lively. But you know what was best?
What?
They had a problem with the curtain. It wouldn't come apart again when it closed after one of the acts.
What was so good about that?
To fill the time while they fixed it, Duke went up on the stage and played a guitar and sang.
Duke did?
He's got a lovely voice. And he'd written all the songs himself. Everybody loved it. And I felt so proud when he came back into the audience and sat next to me.
Are you in love?
Oh, cheeky little one. I don't think I'm going to tell you any more.
Oh, please.
No, you should sleep. But I am going to see him again. We sorted all that out.
And she did see him again. Though he didn't usually come to the farm.
Why not?
Oh, probably because there was a lot of gossip about girls seeing GIs. I think Duke and Harry met Barbara and Sally down the lane, and they drive into Glastonbury or Shepton Mallet for a drink.
And all the time he was married to my mom.
Nobody knew that.
No.
Well, it went on that way for a month or so. And then November. It was cider pressing time. Duke came out alone in the morning, specially to see how the process worked. If you ever get the chance to watch, take it. It's a huge, fierce, fragrant process, and all done with wood and stone. They never let metal touch the fruit. Metal spoils the taste of cider.
Does it?
And finally, when the crushed apple is in position under the press, they turn the windlass and the juice gushes out, and they ladle it into the casks to ferment. And you know what the strangest thing was?
What?
Mr. Lockwood would drop a leg of mutton into each cask.
Mutton? As in meat?
It does something for the fermentation and the flavour. Best cider is mutton fed, is what Mr. Lockwood said. The bones will be picked clean by Christmas.
In the circumstances, that's not very funny, Theo.
But it's true. It's exactly what he said. That first day of cider pressing in November 1943 is one I remember vividly. Because while we were in the kitchen having a tea break, Bernard came in.
Bernard?
Barbara's brother. He'd come over from his own farm to help with the pressing.
Bernard, you look poorly. What's ailing you?
I'll be all right, Mother.
There's something up.
Ah, that Cliff Morton be around again.
Cliff Morton?
What do we mean, be around?
No more than what I say, Father.
Around the farm or what?
Saw his bite when I were walking here, didn't I? Stuffed under brambles in the ditch, far side of the north field, wasn't it?
If that sodden bastard...
Lemon deserter, too. Got his call-up paper September, I was told. Should have reported last month.
I remember that when he heard the word deserter, Duke frowned, and Barbara went pale.
On the run, is he? Well, I'm buggered if he's holing up here.
What are you going to do, George?
Come, Bernard. Show me.
And with that, George and Bernard Lockwood took their shotguns and went out.
Does that mean we won't be pressing more apples today, Mrs. Lockwood?
Not for a bit.
Duke?
What?
Is there time now to show me how to shoot the Colt?
Well, I don't know.
I think that's a good idea, Theo. Can I come too, Duke?
What do you think, Mrs. Lockwood?
I'd say George and Bernard will be some time.
Well, all right then. Sure. You ever fired a pistol before, Barbara?
Never. That's why I'd like to try.
Teaching two's as easy as teaching one, I guess.
Come on, then. Come on.
So we got the Colt out of the drawer. But no sooner were we outside in the farmyard than Barbara left us.
You two go on down the side field. I've just remembered something I have to do first. I'll catch you up.
We can wait. There's no fire.
No, you go on. I'm sure Theo would rather shoot than wait, wouldn't you, Theo?
Can we, Duke?
Yeah, well, all right. See you in a few minutes.
Yeah, in a few minutes.
Come on, Theo. Let's see if you can pop a pigeon for the pot. Mrs. Lockwood would like that, wouldn't she?
She certainly would.
But we didn't go to the south field. We went to the orchard because that's where the pigeons were.
Do you think Barbara will find us, Duke?
Oh, I reckon she'll hear where we are, don't you?
So I fired a pistol for the first time in my life. But the pigeons were safe enough.
Well, at least you got them worried. Got the apple trees worried, too. Bet they wish they could fly.
Are you sure Barbara will find us?
You like her, don't you, Theo?
Yes, I do.
Well, she's a nice gal. A real nice gal. Why don't you go find her, tell her where we are, if that's what you want to do?
She did say she wanted to learn how to shoot.
That she did.
What will you do?
Once they see your gun, the pigeons will think it's safe to come back, so I might be able to take one or two by surprise. Off you go.
So I went.
Barbara! Barbara!
There were a number of outbuildings on the farm.
Barbara!
I couldn't find her anywhere. But finally, in a small barn, the farthest away from the main cluster of farm buildings, I heard her. And when I opened that last door, what I saw was my poor Barbara being raped by Cliff Morton.
Oh, God.
When I say raped, I'm using an adult term for an act that wasn't comprehensible to me at that age.
No.
What I saw was a violent, indecent, and humiliating attack by a strong man on a powerless woman. She struggled and gasped. She was beating a fist on the floor. Her blouse was open to the waist. Her overalls and knickers had been dragged down and were trapped around one of her legs below the knee. There was nothing I could do except run and try to find someone, anyone.
And the person you found was my daddy?
Yes. He was carrying a dead pigeon, dripping blood from where its head used to be. I shouted to him that Cliff Morton had taken off Barbara's clothes and was hurting her. Duke dropped the pigeon and ran past me toward the barns. I was crying by then and went into the farmhouse and told Mrs. Lockwood what I'd seen.
Oh, God.
When she finally understood what I was trying to tell her, she went straight out.
And what did you do?
I ran to my bedroom. I didn't want to see or hear anything more. The next thing I did hear was Mrs. Lockwood coming back with Barbara. Barbara was sobbing hysterically. Mrs. Lockwood took her straight into her bedroom. I never saw Barbara again.
What do you mean?
She stayed in her room all the next day. I heard her sobbing, but they wouldn't let me in. The day after that, they had to break her door down. She'd cut her own throat with her father's razor.
Oh, Theo.
The same day, they sent me back to London. And I wasn't evacuated anymore.
Oh, Theo.
I'm not feeling very sleepy anymore. I'm going to make a cup of tea. Do you want one?
What, tea? Oh, no thanks.
Which was fine, as far as I was concerned. These were events, feelings that I felt a lot of guilt about. It had been a long time since I'd remembered them in an orderly way. I'd never told them to anyone.
Oh, it's you. Changed your mind about the tea?
What? Oh, no thanks. But, Theo.
Yeah?
These things you were telling me about, they were in the fall of 1943, right?
Right.
But Daddy's trial wasn't until 1945.
Well, they didn't find Cliff Morton's skull in the cider barrel until the autumn, 1944.
Oh.
With a big chunk missing. A Colt 45 leaves a big hole.
Theo.
And even though it had been more than a year, Dr. Atwood found the...
Who?
Well, he was the famous forensic pathologist. He found traces of human blood in the little barn, and he found a bullet in one of the barn's wall struts. Once they established that the bullet was a U.S. Army issue 45, it wasn't long before they worked their way back to Duke.
Oh.
Duke and Harry were, as the American Army said, somewhere in Europe and not available for questioning. But I was in London, and only too available, and the police were very interested when I had to tell them about the romance between Duke and Barbara.
Well, yes, they would be.
When Duke came back, the army sent him to London. Foolishly, he denied the lot. Shooting Cliff Morton, having gone into the barn, even having a romantic attachment to Barbara.
What did he seem like in court, Theo?
He wasn't the same man I'd known. He was confused and angry.
Oh, Theo, I have the letters he wrote to my mother. They were kind, gentle letters. He loved her, Theo. He loved me. He couldn't have been a murderer, not a murderer.
But what could I say? We both knew what the jury had decided. We both knew what had happened.
It's a long time ago, Alice, and I think it's time to try to get some sleep. We can talk later.
There you are, sleepyhead.
Oh, what time is it?
Nearly 10:30.
What are you doing?
What does it smell like I'm doing? I found some bacon in the fridge, and I decided to make some pancakes. Do you like pancakes?
Have you been up long?
A while. Would you happen to have any maple syrup?
For the pancakes.
And the bacon. Oh, and is there any coffee?
It's in the fridge door.
In the fridge?
Yeah, I'm going to have a shave.
Don't be long.
As it turned out, Alice had been up since 7.
Oh, this is good.
I'm glad you approve.
What have you been doing since 7? Went to paper?
I passed the time rooting around.
Are you serious?
Sure.
Is that what you usually do the morning after you break into someone's house?
No, this was special.
So, did you find my family jewels?
Something better.
Ah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like a wartime Colt automatic to me. This wouldn't be Daddy's, would it? The murder weapon?
That was in a box in the bottom of a filing cabinet.
True.
Well, put it down, for God's sake. Are you trying to threaten me with it? Because it isn't loaded.
It wasn't. But I found ammunition in the hollow hand grip.
Huh? Are you saying you've loaded the damn thing?
I'm saying that I want to know how you've come to have this gun, Dr. Sinclair. My daddy's gun.
Yes. All right. Jesus.
I'm not on vacation here, Theo. This is important to me.
I'll tell you.
Good.
If you'll do two things.
What?
Pour me some more coffee.
And?
And you're going to have to try and think like a 9-year-old.
Pass your mug.
I told you about Cliff Morton raping Barbara.
And how you stayed in your room instead of going with her mother to help her.
And about Barbara crying and going straight to her room. It was very disturbing.
But I don't have to think like a 9-year-old to know.
Now, Duke didn't come in again. And with Barbara locked away, well, nobody paid much attention to me.
So? I don't get it, Theo. Where was the gun?
Then the next day, everything was awful. Even the meals were makeshift and at the wrong times. It was completely disassociating for a 9-year-old. It seems absurd now, but for the first time I felt homesick.
And?
And I went out looking for the only person, besides Barbara, who'd made me feel special, important.
My daddy.
And although it doesn't make sense, I went looking for him in the last place I'd seen him heading for.
The small barn.
The small barn. Not that he was there. But my being there, where he had been, where he had saved Barbara, made it the most comfortable place for me.
Are you saying you found the gun in the small barn?
It was lying between two sheaves, out of sight. You've got to realize that I knew nothing about Cliff Morton being shot. To me, it was just something that belonged to a friend. Something special, not his.
And so you took it and kept it?
Before I could think twice, I was back in London and then back at my old school. I just forgot about the gun.
Yeah, but a year later, when the police came, you must have figured out how important it was.
Yes, but I wanted Duke to be acquitted, even though I thought he was guilty. I was never going to hand the murder weapon over to the prosecution.
Theo.
What?
You're not 9 years old now.
No.
How come you're still so sure it's the murder weapon?
Well, it was the only Colt 45 automatic, U.S. Army issue, found at the scene of the crime.
But are you really so sure that it was my daddy who pulled the trigger?
It's not what you want to hear, but I am.
Theo, I want you to drive me to Somerset and show me the farm where it happened.
Why?
I thought you'd work me out by now. I want to find out what really happened at that place.
I've told you.
I don't want to seem ungrateful, but I find your version impossible to believe.
What's unbelievable?
Well, since we're talking about it, let's consider the gun, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You said you found it in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So the murderer must have dropped it after he shot Cliff Morton, right?
Yes.
Well, if it was my daddy, why would he do such a stupid thing? He would have known it was damning evidence. An American Army automatic, for crying out loud. Wouldn't he have taken it away with him and got rid of it somewhere else?
Well, not necessarily.
No?
He could have been afraid someone would see him with it.
Well, if he hid it under his tunic.
But he might have planned to come back to pick it up later.
Yeah, but he didn't pick it up later, did he?
Because I'd already found
it. Yeah, but he didn't come back,
but
did he?
I don't know. I was gone a day later.
You secretly kept it, that much I buy. Oh,
thanks so much.
Theo, hasn't it ever occurred to you that holding on to that gun hurt my daddy instead of helping him? That if the police had got the gun, they'd have asked the same questions I have. And that without the gun, they assumed he disposed of it like a ruthless killer would.
It is another way of looking at it, but, well, all I can say is it didn't occur to me at the time.
Because you assumed daddy was guilty.
He was. The forensic evidence was overwhelming.
What forensic evidence?
The bullet which was recovered in the little barn matched bullets they recovered from where Duke had been shooting with me. The jury was only out for an hour.
Well, about right to convict a man they thought had cut the head off his victim and thrown it in a barrel of cider. Tell me, how was Daddy supposed to have done that?
There were a lot of open barrels of cider around, maybe 20.
No, how did he cut up the body?
With an axe or a hacksaw. There's no end of implements around a farm.
He must have been covered in blood.
There's almost no bleeding after death. He could perfectly well have cut off the head and then carried the rest of the body to his jeep and buried it later. It was never found.
Why not drop the other limbs into the other barrels?
Because of Morton's clothes. Look, books have been written on this case. I mean, this sort of thing is thoroughly covered in them.
Is the reaction of the Lockwood family covered in them?
What reaction?
Exactly.
You're going mystical on me now.
The Lockwoods knew Barbara was raped, right? They got that from you, and Mrs. Lockwood saw the pitiful state she was in.
Yes.
So why didn't they call the police?
I don't know. You'd have to ask them.
That's exactly what I'd like to do.
Well, plenty of rapes never get reported. Maybe they thought it was kinder to Barbara to spare her the medical examination and all the questions.
There is another explanation.
Is there?
They would hardly report the rape if they knew Cliff Morton was dead. And how would they know that if what you've told me is the complete story?
I think you may have gathered by now that Alice was a determined girl. So you won't be surprised to hear that by Sunday midday we were in Somerset, in my MG, parked in Christian Gifford in the pouring rain.
It can't have changed that much. This is England. They value old stuff.
Look, I'm sorry, but the school and the village shop have gone. I think I did pretty well to find a village.
Oh, is map reading considered a major accomplishment over here?
Well, at least there's the pub. Did I mention that Barbara's friend Sally was the publican's daughter?
Sally Shoesmith? No.
I've only just remembered.
Oh, and what else haven't you mentioned?
Do you know the old English expression, belt up?
I haven't got a belt.
Wait here. I'll ask in the pub. The name on the lintel over the pub door was no longer Shoesmith, and the barmaid wasn't familiar either. Though she called me my lover, she was helpful, however, and gave good directions.
Are you sure it's the right place?
No, nothing looks familiar. The orchard ought to be where those three greenhouses are, and there was no silo. But it can hardly be anywhere else. Oh, yes. There's the farmhouse.
We found it? Really? I feel kind of nervous.
Fine time to change your mind.
Are you kidding?
Hey! Oh, bloody hell. There was no one about. Only mad Yanks and Englishmen go out in a Somerset deluge.
Where is this small barn?
I led her to the small barn.
My daddy was in here.
Yeah, seems smaller than I remember it, but otherwise...
Show me.
What?
Where it happened.
So I showed her. We even found where a section of a wooden strut had been sawn out. The section the forensic expert Dr. Atwood had discovered the bullet in.
Enough?
Yes.
Was it worth the trouble?
It's not an experience I can evaluate. But I am grateful, Theo.
Well, what's next?
The Lockwoods.
I suppose we'd better try the farmhouse.
Nobody home.
It's probably changed hands by now.
Maybe.
Christ! Are you all right?
There's someone by the car.
I was so angry I didn't stop to think. I marched straight across the yard to the figure in black oilskin standing by my car, holding a shotgun.
You bloody lunatic! You could have killed us!
Rats!
And then I recognized him. Bernard Lockwood, Barbara's brother.
I were firing at rats!
What did he say?
Alice, I think you better get in the car before this madman...
Don't they understand English? I were aiming at two old rats by the gutter in there. Vermin. Them as has four legs and tails.
A god-awful shot if you were.
What you doing here?
Visiting.
Trespass, more like.
Well, maybe you could help us. We want to get in touch with the Lockwood family.
Lockwood? What's your business with they?
With they? You're Bernard Lockwood. Where are your parents, in the house?
This is Bernard?
I nodded rather than answered. My attention had been snatched by the two orange-coloured cartridges Bernard took from his pocket. He was reloading.
My name is Alice Ashenfelter, and my father was the man convicted of murder here. And this is Theo Sinclair, the evacuee who stayed here, you remember.
What's past is past. You'd best be on your way.
Oh, come on, man. We've driven specially from Reading. And your parents were good to me during the war. Least I can do is present my compliments.
I'll pass them on for thee.
So they do still live here. Are they inside?
You'd best get in your car and go.
Mr. Lockwood, we came here in good faith.
Good faith be buggered. Bloody liars, the pair of you.
I'm no liar.
You'd be the killer's daughter, you say?
Yes.
Well, how come your name be Ashenfelter and the killer's name be Donovan?
Now, that's easy.
Ashenfelter was his friend, the little one. Called himself Harry.
Duke's friend Harry's surname was Ashenfelter? It was news to me. And from her reaction, it was news to Alice, too.
That can't be true, Theo. It can't be true.
It is true, all right. Because little Ashenfelter come back here and married the shoesmith gal.
Barbara's friend Sally.
Would be no surprise to thee if you really was here. Courting each other like cats on eat, them two.
And they actually married?
Live in Bath like a lord and lady now, don't they? Publican's daughter, that's all she were. Now you need a bloody visiting card to speak to she. Not that you get much sense out in her from what I've heard.
Well, is something the matter with Sally?
Clear off, bloody liars.
Theo, let's go.
Clear off!
Let's go!
So we went. In the pub in the village, there was a log fire. We went there to dry out. Not what you usually go to a public house for. My malover barmaid continued her good-humoured assistance and even found us a towel. I sat Alice in front of the fire, and I dried her hair.
How are you feeling? Alice? I'm going to get you a brandy. And once you've got that down, you will compare notes on Ashenfelter's. Yeah, we'll work out whether yours and mine can possibly be the same man. Alice?
For the moment, she was lost in the flames. I got the brandy. She drank it without protest.
All right. Harry, Duke's friend, was maybe a year or two older than Duke. Short, say 5'5" or 6". Thick-set with sandy-coloured crinkly hair.
Hmm.
Oh, come on. You can do better than that.
My stepfather was Henry Ashenfelter. He was stubby. He had nicotine-stained fingers with small, pinched-in nails that looked ingrowing.
Snap. I'd watched Harry use those repulsive little hands to give Sally lucky strikes and to pick twigs from her hair.
Snap.
What's snap supposed to mean?
Oh, it's, never mind. I agree completely with your description. My Harry and your Henry are the same man.
I think I've worked out how it happened.
Go on.
Harry is my daddy's buddy. When he gets back to the States, he calls on Mom to pay his respects and to commiserate. She's feeling really low, a widow at 22 with a baby to bring up. She can't say her man died with honor. She can't meet with other war widows, and she doesn't qualify for pension. Is it any wonder she grabbed the chance of marrying Harry?
Is it any wonder it didn't work out?
Hmm.
When did,
Did he abandon her?
Hmm.
When I was 8, 1952. He must have come back over here to look for this Sally, his wartime romance. Ha! Huh. Theo, is that what happened, do you think?
Well, shall we find out?
Can we?
We can try.
I started by asking my new friend, the barmaid.
Sally Shoesmith, me lover. Oh, she got married and lives in Bath.
So we heard. To an American.
Oh, a real live wire Harry is.
Harry?
Oh, comes in irregular and takes all sorts of liberties. You know what I mean? Wandering hands. Oh. In the antique business he is, and doing very nicely, thank you. What with the white murk and the house in the Royal Crescent. So he can afford to buy me a martini when I take offence.
Which you do.
Naturally.
May I buy you a martini?
Oh, don't mind if I do, my lover.
Oh, Theo.
Bath is spectacular, seen from the hillside, isn't it? Do you want to stop? Get out for a minute.
Nope.
Yeah.
It was Harry, all right. I explained who I was and where we'd been that day.
So the people in the pub said you'd come back to England and married Sally. How is she, by the way?
You know Sally?
Well, we all picked apples together, didn't we?
Sally's not so good, kid. So you won't mind if I don't invite you in, huh?
Who is it, Harry?
You don't have to come out. I can deal with it.
Anyone I know?
I'm Theo Sinclair, Sally.
Theo Sinclair. He was the kid evacuated to the Lockwoods in the war.
That little boy with the fringe and the big hungry eyes. Well, what a funny old world this is. And he's brought his young lady to meet us. What are you doing keeping them on the doorstep, Harry? Let them in. Let's all have a drink.
What do you drink?
Scotch and soda for me. And this is Alice.
And what's your poison, Alice?
Fruit juice, if you have any.
Gallons of the stuff. I'll be back in a sec.
Vodka and tonic for me.
Oh, well.
Sit down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We went to see the farm where Theo stayed.
You're American. Harry will be delighted.
And the farm hasn't changed much.
Except for the orchards. They grubbed out all the trees.
I was surprised to find the Lockwoods still in occupation.
They're hard people. Could you speak to them?
Only Bernard.
He owns it all now, you know. The mum and dad look after the vegetables behind the house, that's all.
Do you keep up with them?
No. Barbara was a real pal, rest her soul. And her mum's been here for coffee, but I've no time for the men.
Do you ever visit the village?
Whenever I can. It is my home, after all. Oh, I do miss the old days. Well, you remember.
I remember Barbara.
Poor kid.
Yes. Shocking.
Well, there were difficult times for Barbara at the end. What, with her having just found out she was pregnant?
She was what?
Didn't you know?
Pregnant?
Only a little bit. I was just saying we had a regular downpour here this afternoon, didn't we, Harry?
Sure did. There you go. Scotch and sodas for the gentlemen. And grapefruit juices for the ladies.
Thank you.
With vodka.
Without.
You're kidding.
Now, come on, Sal.
Prick.
I locked it.
Screw you.
She's not allowed alcohol. So, you remember Duke?
I certainly do.
Too bad, poor guy. He should be alive today.
What do you mean?
Just that, sweetheart. Duke was in it. I locked it.
Screw you.
She's not allowed alcohol. So, you remember Duke?
I certainly do.
Too bad, poor guy. He should be alive today.
What do you mean?
Just that, sweetheart. Duke was innocent. And I could have saved him. But when they put him on trial, I was somewhere this side of Berlin, mopping up. First I heard was August 45, gossip over a beer. You can imagine how shocked I was.
How do you know that my daddy was innocent?
Hang on, wait. Hang on. Just who are you?
She's the daughter of Duke and Eleanor Donovan.
Never. Ellie's child? Your little Alice? Ha! Well, why didn't you tell me? Jeez, Louise.
Oh, we didn't know how you'd react.
Can you beat that? I married her mother. Did you know that?
Yes.
Ha! Tell me, Ellie, is she still...
She died.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. How?
A car crash earlier this year.
Alice, honey, if there's anything that you need,
tell me about my daddy.
Yeah. Well, all right.
And so Harry Ashenfelter had told us about his friendship with Duke Donovan. The story began with the first time they met. And the look on Alice's face showed me she was a sponge for any details about her father. And Harry had known Duke well.
And then we got sent to Shepton Mallet, England. Great name, crummy place. A stone cross, a prison, and 5,000 GIs bored out of their skulls.
And then you and Duke found Sally and Barbara.
Well, I found Sally, all right, but Duke and Barbara just came along to make up numbers.
Oh, that can't be right.
What, are you telling me?
I was there, too.
Look, Duke was married. He was just doing me, a buddy, a favor. Look, this was 20 years ago. Nice girls moved in pairs, you know, safety in numbers. There was no way I could date Sally without finding someone for her friend, and Duke was the someone. He drove. Barbara sat by him in the front seat, but all the action was in the back seat.
But I thought Daddy met Barbara at the end of the lane to the Lockwood farm.
When was he supposed to have done that?
Most nights.
Look, most nights Duke spent making up songs or writing to Ellie. Alice, honey, who's been giving you this crap?
Maybe he didn't tell you.
Nuts! And that stuff at the trial about Duke being jealous, that's nuts, too. And Duke hardly knew this guy, Morton, the one he's supposed to have shot.
But are you saying that Duke had no romantic feelings for Barbara?
That's right. Zilch.
Well, how about Barbara's feelings for him?
Also, zilch. Barbara was doing a favor for Sally.
Can we ask Sally?
Yeah, sure. Why not? And if you're going through the whole case, she can help you there, too. I mean, the boy here saw the rape. Morton had it, and Barbara's screaming and struggling, but Sally knows all the inside stuff. She was Barbara's best friend, and the rest she heard from Mrs. Lockwood, including the suicide.
But what about what you saw?
Well, I wasn't there, was I?
But did you see Duke when he got back to the base?
Well, I did, as it happens, because of how we arranged for the Jeep. I had to be there to check it in and out.
And how did Duke seem when he got back?
Kind of solemn. Tight-lipped.
What about his appearance? Was there any blood on his clothes? Any sign of violence?
Nope.
He was in uniform?
Sure.
All the buttons in place? Everything tucked in?
Look, I didn't measure the guy. I don't remember noticing anything strange. I was more concerned about the next time I could get out and see Sally, you know?
And when was that?
Well, it was supposed to be that night, only Duke said he didn't think Barbara would feel much like coming out again.
He said that?
Well, which was not what I wanted to hear. But it turned out not to matter much, because we got moved on from Shepton Mallet not long after that. Like a week. We both got sent to Colchester, and after that, they split us up. Next I heard was 1945, over a beer, like I said. It was a padre that told me, would you believe it? But the details, I mean, they were all bull. And if Barbara was pregnant, then it was by some other guy. Look, I told you how it was between Duke and her.
Zilch.
You got that right. I mean, he may have heisted a 45 and borrowed a Jeep for private trips, but Duke was one of the gentlest, most civilized soldiers in the army. I just couldn't believe it when I heard. But what could I do? Bring him back to life? Well, Alice, you know what I did do.
Found my mother.
Precisely. Helped the living. And that just wasn't her, honey. That was you. And how much good would it have done you as a kid if I'd spent hours writing letters to army bureaus and English judges and stuff? Your mother and me, we decided it was best to let it drop, for your sake.
Thanks.
Huh, there's some empty glasses. Who wants a refill?
If it's all the same to you, I'd rather talk some more to your wife.
No problem.
But as it turned out, there was a problem.
Sorry, sweetheart, but no dice. Sally's out cold.
What?
She took a chisel to the cocktail cabinet in the kitchen, and she's been through a whole bottle of vodka.
We left him tending to Sally, and we went into the center of Bath. It was time for a talk and a meal. The meal was not so easy on a Sunday night in 1964, and the hungry search probably did little for our moods. We did finally find a small private hotel called the Annual Cure, which graciously allowed us into its basement dining room.
What do you fancy?
I don't mind. Anything.
Ah, I don't hold out much hope for the food.
Why not?
No other diners. Well, best to stick to something simple.
I don't mind. You order.
Place and chips seemed the closest thing to foolproof, which made me the fool when dried up fish and undercooked chips arrived with a crusty bottle of ketchup and no other vegetables or garnish.
Sorry. Made a bad choice. Do you want me to send it back?
What are you talking about?
The food.
Oh, it'll do. I've got more important things on my mind.
Harry?
What he told us.
Such as?
Barbara being pregnant.
That was a shocker.
And about there being nothing romantic between my daddy and Barbara?
Which points up the patchiness of Harry's version of events.
How?
Oh, Barbara being pregnant rather contradicts the so-called lack of romantic attachment, don't you think?
No, Theo, I don't think. You're not seriously suggesting it was my daddy who got Barbara pregnant,
well,
are
someone
you?
Someone certainly did. She wasn't promiscuous.
Well, I think this Cliff Morton is the obvious candidate.
Look, she killed herself 2 days after the rape. There's no way she could have decided she was pregnant in just 2 days.
I'm not talking about the rape.
The fish will get cold.
What about those love bites on her neck? That day when her father dragged her out of the orchard while everyone else was interested in the movie star GIs? And you told me yourself that Cliff Morton was interested in her.
So he was pestering her before he finally caught her alone.
That apple harvest thing was in September, right?
Yes.
Wasn't that when this Morton got his call-up papers? That's what you told me Mrs. Lockwood said. He got his call-up papers, and he was supposed to report, and then he didn't, so she called him a deserter.
So?
Suppose Cliff Morton and Barbara were lovers, Theo. Suppose she'd been hiding him so he didn't have to go to the war.
Suppose she'd been going out with my daddy just the way Harry said she did to make up the numbers and to give herself an excuse to go out other times when it wasn't to see daddy at all, but to see Cliff Morton.
Now, you're forgetting, Alice. I was there. I may only have been 9, but I wasn't stupid. I heard the affection and pride in her voice when she told me about the concert and Duke singing.
Was it all her pride, Theo? Couldn't it have been your pride, too, in your soldier friend and in the fact that you had brought him and Barbara together?
What could I say? I'd been there, she hadn't. A fact she chose to ignore.
Let's go back to the decisive afternoon.
All right.
Bernard comes in saying he's seen Cliff Morton's bike.
Yes.
And Bernard and Mr. Lockwood take their shotguns and go out looking for Morton.
Yes.
And as soon as that happens, Barbara volunteers to go out shooting with you and Duke. But no sooner is she out of the farmhouse and away from her mother than she leaves the two of you.
It was a way of interpreting what had indisputably happened.
And the next time she's seen by you, it's in the small barn with Cliff Morton.
Well, you're saying she found him rather than that he found her?
Yes.
But what about the rape? I mean, that makes a nonsense of everything you've said up to now.
Well, whose word have we got that this rape ever took place? Only yours.
It was accepted by a judge and jury. Are you putting yourself above them?
Oh, honestly. The judge and jury were appointed to hear a case of murder, not rape. The story of the rape was never seriously questioned or seriously established. They simply accepted the word of a 9-year-old boy.
I may have been 9 then, but I'm 29 now, and that was rape.
Well, okay. But remember the way you described it to me? The way they were lying, the sounds they made, the movements? And, well, nothing you described was untypical of passionate lovemaking. You said she had her clothes hiked up. She was gasping and crying out.
Oh, come on. She was beating her fists on the floor.
Well, wouldn't she have been using her fists on him if he was raping her? Look, Theo, as a child, it's understandable that a sight of adults in the act of love would alarm you, but surely with maturity you can analyze what you witnessed. Why would Cliff Morton have been on the Lockwood farm at all if it wasn't for Barbara? He would hardly have expected any help from anyone else there. And why did Barbara go to the little barn?
We do have another witness to the rape.
Oh?
Duke. Well, he would hardly have shot Morton if what he found in the little barn had been between consenting adults.
But I don't think he did shoot Morton. I don't think that's what happened at all.
So what happened?
Maybe he did go to the little barn and see them. If he did, I think he left them to it. I think he decided the best thing at all would be to get in his Jeep and go back to the base.
But the gun was in the barn.
Who is our witness for that?
I found it there.
The gun you have is the gun. I don't doubt that. But how did you get it? If Daddy decided to hightail it back to the base, maybe he ran into you in the farmyard. If he did, it seems entirely natural that he would have given you the gun to take back to the house and put in the drawer where it was kept so that he wouldn't have to explain to Mrs. Lockwood why he was leaving. I think my daddy gave you the gun himself, Theo, and then he left.
Look, I've already told you that's not what happened.
But you say that's not what you remember.
What exactly are you trying to say, Alice?
I think you saw those two people making love. I think you were shocked, as only a pre-adolescent child can be. I think you had the gun. I think you went back into the small barn and shot Cliff Morton yourself. I think your memories erased all that, but it explains how you come to have the gun now, and it explains why they didn't let you see Barbara again, and explains why they got you out of there as fast as they could.
I got out of there and into my car as fast as I could. Ungentlemanly, perhaps, to leave a woman alone in a strange city at night. But I always do that when I'm accused of committing a murder and then forgetting all about it. One of my little quirks. No, it isn't. But to say I was angry is to minimize my reaction. I was crimson with rage. And the closer I got to Reading and home, the more my rage was directed at myself. Had I really expected anything sensible to follow from a blonde stranger surprising me in my bed? I'm an idiot. I felt a little better after my first cup of tea at home. But through the course of a sleepless night, I came to realize that Alice Ashenfelter was a loose cannon. Who knew what trouble she would cause with her crazy theories if I didn't find a way to confirm the facts of the 20-year-old murder first? I was not at my best Monday morning when I delivered an early lecture on the Venerable Bede, but I managed, and then I went straight to the telephone in the senior common room.
Theo, What have you been doing? You look awful. Oh,
thanks a bundle, Jake.
Ashnafelter?
Hello. Is that Sally?
Yes.
Well, this is Theo Sinclair, the evacuee. I visited you yesterday, remember?
I was far from sure that she would, although her voice sounded encouragingly clear.
Of course. Little Theo. But I'm afraid my husband isn't here this morning.
Actually, it's you I wanted to speak to.
Me?
We didn't have much time to talk yesterday, and there are a couple of things from the old days that I'd very much like to ask you about.
Suddenly I'm in demand.
Could we meet, you think? I'll come to Bath. We could meet in town.
Which day did you have in mind?
How about tomorrow?
Oh, well, let's see. Harry's going to be out all day, so that's all right. Someone's coming in the morning. I can't put them off. How about a lunchtime drink in the Francis?
Alcoholics are smart operators.
I'm afraid that's difficult for me. How about afternoon tea in the pump room?
Cucumber sandwiches. 3 B's orchestra and all. Oh, all right. Let's make it 3 before it gets too crowded.
I'll reserve a table for 3 o'clock tomorrow.
What I reserved for today was a lunchtime walk across White Knights Park with a lecturer in the university's psychology department. A specialist in the memory and how it functions. Angus Ott.
Dr. Sinclair.
Dr. Ott, thanks for meeting me.
You did rather stimulate my curiosity. A rape or not a rape?
Well, it's a bit of a story.
I've never claimed to be finely tuned to how people act and think and why. What I wanted an outside opinion on was how accurate my memory of what I saw was likely to be. It was a genuine quest. If Alice's hypothesis about me might be right, I wanted to know. I put the situation to Dr. Ott as dispassionately as I could. And I can be dispassionate. I am, after all, an academic.
Well, I can construct an alternative psychological scenario.
Go on, then.
You were emotionally attached to the girl, Barbara. Idolized her to some extent.
Yes.
It could be that the sight of her giving herself in love to a stranger was what disturbed you most. Perhaps you couldn't accept that, so you invented a set of circumstances that left her blameless in your eyes.
Well, you're saying that I might have invented the rape to obliterate something that was even more unthinkable.
It's one hypothesis. Feelings of guilt can be very powerful. And you raised the alarm when you found the couple together.
Yes.
And the girl subsequently committed suicide. Perhaps beneath that urbane exterior, you blame yourself.
I was losing track of what I blamed myself for. Fortunately, my next stop was with someone whose interests were not nuts, but nuts and bolts. Danny Leftwich was a physicist, but I didn't seek him out to improve my understanding of vectors or Fermat's last theorem. I knew Danny as a fellow bridge player, and because of our social contact, I knew that as well as being a physicist, Danny was active in the University Rifle and Small Arms Club, which, as it happened, had one of the best university firing ranges in the country.
Danny.
Theo.
Ever seen anything like this before?
A cold automatic. Hey, if you don't mind, Theo, always pick up a gum at the non-shooting hand. I didn't know you were a gunman on the QT.
Well, you can see from the state of it, I'm not. It's a relic, souvenir. And please don't ask me if I have a certificate for it.
Oh, no one's fired this thing in years. There's all kinds of gunge. You want me to clean it up, is that it?
Please.
What else have we got here? Good God. Live ammunition. What is it, World War II stuff?
No good now, I suppose.
Well, I wouldn't want to be the one pulling the trigger.
Could you dispose of it for me?
Of course. It's the ammunition, you mean, I take
it. I want to keep the gun. It has sentimental value.
That's what all the bank robbers say.
Would the gun still be safe to use with some up-to-date bullets?
Oh, I don't see why not, after it's been cleaned and oiled. Well, I'll test fire it if you like. We have a few boxes of .45s at the range.
Could I be there when you test it?
You are planning a heist.
I want to get a sense of the kick it has. I did fire it a couple of times when I was 9, but I don't have a clear memory of the recoil.
You're welcome, if you can stand an early morning.
How early?
I can go day after tomorrow. At 8 a.m.
Ever since Beau Nash, formalities in the pump room have been strictly observed. You don't slob in and sit at the nearest table. You wait for a lady with pendant pearl earrings to escort you to a Chippendale chair and hand you a menu. My request to be seated as far away from the music as possible was not warmly received. It was 2:55. I would ask Sally straight out, Had Duke and Barbara been lovers? Never mind Harry's zilch. Sally would know. She was Barbara's best friend. And she would also know whatever there was to know about Cliff Morton. At 3:25, I ordered a pot of tea for two. Not just to keep the waitress's face from becoming set in a scowl. At 4:10, I accepted reality. I had been stood up. I paid the bill and I collected my car. And then I decided to drive up to the Royal Crescent to hear Sally's excuse for not turning up firsthand, if she was sober enough to answer the door.
What's happened?
Fire, mate, over there.
The Ashenfelters' house. It was gutted.
Was anybody inside?
They loaded someone in an ambulance. Dunno, I tried to get there, but I couldn't even see whether it was a man or a woman.
As soon as I arrived at the casualty department at Royal United Hospital, I saw the man.
Mr. Ashenfelter?
Oh, who now? Oh, you. What the hell are you doing here?
I went to the house and they told me. What's happening?
She's unconscious. Asphyxia. Third degree burns.
Do they hold out much hope?
No one's sane. The only one that wants to talk is some cop, but I had a belly full of him. Look, I was out all day. I got back around 4. Home sweet home, huh? Jeez Louise.
Any idea of the cause?
What, you too? Look, I told them and I tell you she's a dipso. She smokes, okay? That's the long and the short of it.
Have they said she was drinking?
So far, they've said nothing.
Mr. Ashenfelter?
That's me.
I would like to have a word with you in private, please.
I think I know what the word is. Dead, right?
Right.
Just leave me alone. The both of you. Alone. You got it?
Right.
We left Harry alone. The young doctor headed one way, I headed the other. But I didn't get very far.
Excuse me, sir. I'm not in your way, am I?
We'd like a few words.
Oh, yes. And who are we?
Detective Inspector Voss, CID, Bath Police.
Police?
You were talking with Henry Ashenfelter in there.
So?
A friend of the family, sir?
Well, not exactly, but look, what the hell's going on here?
And what is going on is that Mrs. Ashenfelter was found in the living room where the fire began. It was started in a waste bin in the middle of a stack of wooden objects.
You mean arson?
I mean murder. And I'll give you a choice now, sir. Accompany me to my vehicle for an informal chat, or accompany me to the station to assist with my inquiries rather more formally.
My mind was whirring. Once I was with Voss in his car, I fumbled through how I had known Sally and Harry and how I'd come to visit their house. I don't remember much of what I said. I was preoccupied. Sally murdered?
So, Dr. Sinclair, now we've dealt with the past, perhaps you can tell me why you happened to be in Bath today.
I was waiting in the pump room most of the time. I'd arranged to meet Sally Ashenfelter at 3.
Arriving in Bath when?
About 2:30.
Where were you at 1:30?
On the A4. I drove up from Reading.
What was your business with Mrs. Ashenfelter?
Sunday we began talking about the old days, but then she, well, she got drunk and passed out.
And you hadn't seen her for 20 years until Sunday?
Yes.
What is so urgent about the old days that you make a special trip today?
I'm an historian, Inspector.
And that's supposed to explain it?
Makes sense to me.
Or at least as much sense as I could make.
Why 3 in the afternoon? I'd have thought you'd been doing whatever historians get paid to do.
I won't take you through the intricacies of my timetable, Inspector, but I picked the daytime because I thought she was more likely to be sober, and I picked the afternoon because she told me that someone else was coming in the morning.
Oh.
She didn't say, only that someone was coming who couldn't be put off.
The husband didn't mention a visitor?
Maybe he wasn't told.
Why not?
I'm the wrong person to ask, Inspector.
So he decided to ask the right person, after making sure he had my home address and phone number.
Just don't leave the country, right?
But leaving Bath was all right, and I did. Sally murdered. I couldn't escape the horror of it. The day I was due to talk to her, someone had gone into her house, perhaps plied her with drink until she passed out, then built a bonfire. Why? Who? It was frightening. It frightened me. I pulled off the road and found a phone box.
Hello?
Danny?
Yes?
Theo Sinclair, Danny.
Ah, I was just cleaning your gun, getting it ready for tomorrow morning.
I'm not going to be able to make it tomorrow, I'm afraid. The reason I'm ringing is that I'd like to pick it up tonight. Are you going to be in?
Well, I'm in now. So you don't want me to test fire it for you?
No, thanks. Another time. But, well, if you do have those new cartridges, I'd like to buy a few. No question, I'd feel safer with Duke's gun. Well, what would you expect someone to feel who's accused of one murder and then less than 2 days later is questioned by the police about another? And then, as I drove home, I became sure that I was being followed. Call me paranoid if you like. It didn't mean that people weren't out to get me. To shake my pursuer, if he was there, I left the A4 and spent a long time doubling back on myself in the lanes. Well, that's how you're supposed to do it, isn't it? And I headed to Danny's house without stopping at my own.
You know what you're asking me to do is illegal, don't you, Theo? That if I weren't so devil-may-care, I would never even consider it.
I know, Danny, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, just don't shoot anybody. It'd upset my mum something awful if I went to jail.
I promise. And I'll always pick the Colt up with my non-shooting hand.
With a gun in one pocket and a box of cartridges in the other, I felt better than I had all day. Until I got home and found a white Mercedes in my driveway. I didn't have long to wonder whose it was. The driver got out as soon as he saw the MG. He wasn't steady on his feet, but he was fixed in his purpose. He nearly wrenched the MG's door off.
Out, jerk!
Now, what's this about, Harry?
I said get out!
Not unless you get away from my car.
Get out!
But he moved away. His unsteady movement suggested that he'd been drinking. Well, not that I could grudge him that on the day his wife had been murdered. After the dent his fist made in the bonnet of the MG, I cradled the Colt in my pocket. I just wished I'd loaded it when I had the chance. I wasn't very good at this murder and be murdered stuff. Not that I was really frightened of him.
Come into the house.
Like hell I will.
Well, I'm going in. You can do as you like.
Smug, limey bastard.
How about some coffee?
Nuts to you, punk. I want you to tell me why you set fire to my home and murdered Sally. Then I'm going to return the favor.
Don't be silly. I had nothing to do with it.
Crap. I'm going to have the truth out of you.
God, Jesus. Are you off your perch?
You little creep.
You just get back where you were.
What the?
This is in good nick, and it's loaded. Just get back from me. Over there. Easy now.
You're going to kill me too?
Oh, I've got a right to defend myself.
I know that gun. It's a U.S. Army automatic. Damn, that's the one the police never found after Morton was shot. You tell me it isn't.
But I couldn't, so I shrugged and said nothing.
You have the gun. How's that happen, kid, huh? You that shot Morton and then let Duke swing for it, crushed. And Sally was actually sorry for you, you know that? She told me you had Barbara Lockwood all wrong, but didn't want to upset you by saying so.
Well, wrong? How?
Wrong because Barbara was nuts on that Morton guy. She really loved him. And she was carrying his baby.
How did Sally know that?
Barbara told Sal everything. She was the only one Barbara could talk to. Her parents knew enough about Morton to order Barbara not to see him, but they didn't know about the baby. And then the guy's call-up papers came. And this Morton was a doozy. He has some kind of a plan to run away to Ireland, in a neutral country, right? And for him and Barbara to get married. While he was trying to set that up, Barbara hit him out on the farm. Right up to the day you shot him.
I didn't shoot him, Harry.
But that's the gun. You have it.
I found the gun, and I didn't shoot him. And I loved Duke. I could never have let him hang.
The guy was innocent.
I know. It breaks my heart. It's monstrous. Hideous. I didn't kill Morton.
Says you.
I was 9. How was I supposed to cut his head off?
Yeah. Well,
For 20 years, I swallowed the story that Duke was the killer. But now I'm bloody certain that he wasn't. And I'm going to find the killer, Harry. I don't know for sure who it was, but I know where to go.
The farm?
Yes.
But Sally?
All I can think is that Sally was killed by the person who visited her this morning because of what she would have told me this afternoon.
Well, I don't know about that. But I decided I'd buy that you didn't kill anybody. Yeah, I take your point about being a kid and so on. I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk right out of here, and get my car and drive out of your life. Now, how does that sound to you?
It sounded good. I lowered the gun, even put it in my pocket. I went to the door to open it for him. One moment he was behind me, and then I caught sight of something moving quickly. I was a sitting duck. Now I know it was a glass paperweight, one of those with liquid inside and a snow scene. You shake it, and it snows. Only when Harry shook me with it, I saw stars.
Oh! Oh!
I hurt, therefore I was.
Oh!
The clock read 9:20. At first, I couldn't tell whether it was morning 9:20 or night 9:20. The daylight proved the decisive clue.
Oh!
And then I realized that Harry had taken the Colt and the box of cartridges. I made my way to the A4 and headed west. I made good time to Somerset, to Frome, wedged steeply between two hills, to the prison town of Shepton Mallet, and finally, spectrally pale in persistent mist, to the village of Christian Gifford. I stopped well short of the farm and left the car at the side of the lane. I walked the rest of the way to the farmhouse. Not easy, but necessary. The last time I'd knocked on the Lockwoods' door, Bernard's shotgun had blown away some of the stonework above my head, above Alice's head. I felt bad now about Alice. I wished I knew where she was.
Hello, Mr. Lockwood.
From his outward appearance, George Lockwood was little altered.
I called on Sunday, hoping to see you and Mrs. Lockwood. I'm Theo Sinclair, the evacuee.
The evacuee?
Even in the doorway, the potent smell of baking mixed with the pungent odor of the musty old carpets. I remembered both vividly.
Who is it, George?
Says he be Theo Sinclair.
Oh, little Theo, my dear.
Mrs. Lockwood gave me the biggest, warmest hug, and for a moment, just a moment, we were both younger and more innocent.
You can still find room for fresh-baked scones, I reckon.
Indeed, I can. Thank you.
Where's Bernard to?
Ploughing. He'll be here presently.
Little Theo.
And the three of us had scones with strawberry jam and drank tea from the brown pot simmering on the range, while I told them in a few crisp sentences what I'd done with my life since 1944.
And what brings you back to these parts?
Duke Donovan's daughter. She persuaded me to bring her here on Sunday. We, met Bernard.
We heard.
I didn't have the good fortune to see you, though, so I came back today.
Donovan had a daughter.
Bernard told us, George. Father's not so quick on the uptake as he were.
I didn't know you were married.
George? Theo, have some more butter on that. 'Tisn't the war now, you know.
Duke Donovan's daughter, Alice, believes her father was innocent.
What does she know about it?
And she's not the only one. Do you remember Harry Ashenfelter, the other GI, Duke's friend?
What about Ashenfelter?
I never heard Bernard enter. I had no idea how long he'd been standing behind me, listening.
Bernard, hello.
My greeting was interrupted by the sight of the twin barrels of Bernard's shotgun.
Sit down, Bernard. 'Tis only Theo come to see us.
For no good purpose. He be coming with I.
What's got into he today? We don't carry guns in this house.
If the bastard do what I say, there'll be no shooting indoors. Get up, you.
Bernard, this isn't the way.
Let me be, Mother.
George?
I was watching only Bernard and his shotgun. But surely he wasn't a killer. Not a killer. He wasn't sufficiently passionate or clever for that.
All right, I'll go. I'm on the way out.
Too bloody true.
He'd given my words an ugly twist, but surely... I moved slowly toward the door. He covered my progress with his shotgun.
I won't let you.
Keep out of it.
My son is not a killer. Thou shalt not kill. Killing is something else, Bernard.
You should know, Mother.
And in those four words, I learned what I had come to find out.
Blaspheming hypocrite. Quoting the Lord's commandments at me when the smell of death is still on you.
That's not true.
What about yesterday? Bernard, darling, would you drive me into Frome early? I made an appointment with the optician. Optician be buggered.
I watched you go into the half-license and come out with two bottles of spirit. I saw you make off to the railway station and buy a ticket. Your appointment weren't in Froome and it weren't with no optician. You took the train to Bath.
What have you done, my love? You promised no more killing. No more blood, you said.
It was all forgotten. And then...
And then I knew how it had happened. I see Cliff Morton and Barbara in the barn. I run and tell Duke. Duke decides to leave, but goes to the house first to return the gun. And in the house, he runs into Mrs. Lockwood, who takes the gun from him. Oh, my God. My God. And then, on Sunday, after Bernard told me and Alice that Sally was in Bath, he must have told his mother what he'd said. And she... Oh, my God.
Hey, where do you think you're going?
I left my car on the lane. But there's no reason for you to come all that way with me.
You're to the barn.
Oh, come on, man. There's no need to worry. I'm perfectly capable of letting sleeping dogs lie.
Sleeping dogs, eh? You're a sleeping dog, all right. Want to be put down.
It wasn't until that moment that I actually believed what he was threatening. But that's murder you're talking about.
Move!
He stuck the shotgun into my backbone. It became a forced march. Slowly, but inexorably, we approached the small barn. The barn. All I could think to do was talk to him. You're not a murderer. You don't have to repeat your mother's mistakes. Well, there's no blood on your hands. Worst you could be is an accessory. It's your future as well as mine. Have you thought of that? I could have saved my breath. At 20 yards from the barn, I tried to work out if I could catch him off guard by slipping through the door inside. If I could only close the door on him without being blown away at point-blank range. But it was as if he could read my thoughts.
Nothing quick, mind. I can drop you right here. Makes no odds to I.
So we went into the small barn.
Over there. Again, the ladder to the hayloft.
My time was running out. I had to try something. I took a step toward the ladder and then jumped back towards him. But he cracked me on the shoulder with the butt of the shotgun, which at least meant he wasn't planning to shoot me here unless he had to.
Dumb bugger. Think I'm not watching thee?
What did he have in mind?
To the ladder, I said. No more tricks.
I stumbled as I neared the ladder. I stepped on something soft. Don't push. There's something here.
So there be. He thought he could interfere too.
He? I looked down. It was no bag of fertilizer. It was the body of Harry Ashenfelter. I bent and touched it. I felt something wet on his chest. There wasn't much light, but it didn't take a PhD to work out that it was blood. You're a killer. A blooded killer. Just like your mother.
You hush about, sheep!
I must have lost consciousness for a moment or two, because the next thing I knew, I'd been dragged to the ladder and tied loosely to it.
Oh.
And I smelled petrol. In the shadows, I saw the rhythmic movement as Bernard splashed petrol from a can. It was like he was sighing back and forth. He was death, scything, mowing the meadow that was my life. No! I struggled with the ropes that held me. I got an arm free. That loosened the ties around the other. But my legs were also bound, and in my heart I knew it was all too late. Bloody maniac! Then, silhouetted in the light from the door, I saw him take a cigarette lighter from his pocket. And like a gun misfiring, the bloody thing wouldn't light. Behind Bernard, a figure appeared and pushed the barn door wide open. Alice. It was Alice. She had something to hit him with, and she did. She did. She hit him.
Oh!
I saw the cigarette lighter drop from Bernard's hand, but he didn't fall.
Theo!
There's room enough for thee with them.
Oh!
And he knocked Alice flat with a diving tackle.
Theo!
And then he was tugging at her head while his knee pinned her to the floor. Her neck looked ready to snap any second. I seized my other hand. But I didn't work at the rope around my legs. Our chance, our only chance, was the Colt 45 Harry had taken from me last night, if he still had it on him. One pocket. Nothing. Wrestling with a dead man, the other pocket underneath. The Colt. If only he had loaded it. We were hours with Detective Inspector Voss that day. But there were a lot of other people he had to see, so we were allowed to go home. My home.
I read in a Bath paper about Sally being killed in the fire.
I went up to the house to see, and I knew I'd been wrong about you. Shooting Morton, I mean. Whoever killed Sally did it to silence her, and I never took you for a cold-blooded killer. And I didn't think Harry could do something that horrible to Sally, which only left the Lockwoods. But my problem was how to get down there, and what to do once I did.
You never thought to ring me, I suppose. Apologies a little tough for you, are they?
I did call you, Theo, about 9:30 this morning.
Ah.
But when you weren't there, I had to work out my own transportation, which is pretty complicated. And then as I was walking from the center of the village to the farm, I saw your car, so I knew you were someplace close. So I decided to look for you.
And saved my life. Even though I was responsible for taking your father's.
Oh, you couldn't help that, Theo.
People have been telling me for years not to feel guilty for my part in Duke's conviction. They say I couldn't have done any different, that I spoke what I understood to be the truth, which I did. But I can't forget. I never will.
Theo?
Just about done.
For tonight?
No. With telling the whole story.
Oh. Where did you end it?
With us driving back to Reading on that day at the Lockwoods. After you saved my life.
Save your life, make your dinner. Us American gals can turn our hands just about anything.
Well, the actual end is you telling me not to blame myself about testifying against Duke.
Well, you shouldn't feel guilty about that.
I know, love.
You should feel guilty about letting the dinner I've slaved over go cold.
It's done now. Out of my system.
You're not going to tell him about what happened to us?
Us?
Living happily ever after.
Hmm?
Come on, dinner.
Living happily ever after with a pushy American broad like you? No. It's an extraordinary enough story without stretching credulity that far.
It's my shepherd's pie.
Oh. And so, dear reader, unbelievable as it may seem, Alice has learned to make a delicious shepherd's pie.
My secret is to put in a little cider.
In Rough Cider, dramatized by Michael Z. Lewin, from a novel by Peter Lovesey, Rob Edwards played Theo, Bryony Glasgow Alice, Peter Whitman Harry, David Jarvis Duke, Una Beeson Barbara, William Wortley Young Theo, Tina Gray Mrs. Lockwood, Neville Jason Mr. Lockwood, Malcolm Ward Bernard, Francis Jeter Sally, Don McCorkindale Voss, Lyndon Gregory Danny, and Gavin Muir, Dr. Ott. The play was directed by Matthew Walters.
Unlike most farmers, Michael Evers positively encourages visitors onto his land. Every year he organises and hosts the Glastonbury Festival, the world's largest popular music concert. At the end of June, the cows retreat to their winter quarters while 80,000 fans descend on his Somerset dairy farm.
And when it's all over, of course, do we pick up all the rubbish? I mean, you've got 250 people, but they clean up the whole farm. They're like a vacuum cleaner. They go around hands and knees. They pick up every single bit of waste that they find, you know, and litter that they find. Actually, a local farmer came in last year when it was all over, and he said, but you know what, to Michael, this is the cleanest farm in Somerset now. Everything was absolutely spotless, all the matches, even the fag ends get picked up.
The cleanest farm in Somerset, and perhaps the most controversial as well. Join Robert Forster for breakfast with Michael and Jean Evers when he discovers the truth behind this world-famous festival in the first of a new series of On Your Farm at 7:15 tomorrow morning. But now on Radio 4, it's time for Music in Mind with Brian Kay.
Hello again. Our first port of call this evening is the Square in Seville, in the fourth act of Bizet's Carmen. A huge crowd is waiting for the entertainment to begin in the neighbouring bullring. As the procession moves past, the onlookers go through a sort of checklist of stars. Alguaciles, chulos, banderilleros, picadores, and finally the man they've all come to see, Escamillo, the toreador.
Music, 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 music
excitement mounts at the beginning of Act 4 of Bizet's Carmen. There's trouble in store, but for now there's a bullfight to enjoy. Robert Shaw conducted the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra and Chorus. Right at the end of the 19th century, things were looking pretty bleak for the composer Rachmaninoff. His first symphony had been hammered by all those who heard it, and he spent a few years in the depths of depression. He even resorted to hypnosis to cheer himself up. The change came with the second piano concerto, still a great favourite. And by the time he came to write this waltz for two pianos, things were obviously looking up.